Welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, November 17th, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, we feature a segment from our most recent Off the Hill political panel. This month, the theme was Off the Hill, Media Accountability and Covering Gaza. In this panel, our guests analyzed the media coverage the conflict in the Gaza Strip has received. Our panel included Chris Ferris Zabane, Bizan Zubi, L. Jones, and Carl Nirenberg, co-hosted by Robin Brown and Libby Davies. Here is a small clip from that panel. Take a listen.
To open the discussion, I'd like to begin with a general question to each of the panelists, and we'll start with you, Bizan. So first, just tell us what media you're relying on for information about the conflict and what you're avoiding, if anything, and then give us your take on the coverage that you are consuming. So we'll start with Bizan.
So I will be honest, I don't have cable, and so I have watched very few like traditional news media broadcasts about it. The one that I did see was the CBC National, and it was terrible, and I turned it off. It actually hurt my feelings. I couldn't watch it. I didn't have any interest in that. I was really disappointed in that. So I have been finding that this time and this kind of like where we are in terms of social media, that the on the ground and actual first person coverage, so from people in Gaza, has just been so powerful and so amazing. And so that is really where I like to go. And so there's three specific young people. One of them is named Bizan, one of them is named Plestia, one of them is Motaz, and they have really, I think, shown such a visceral and devastating truth of what it's like to actually be in that place that you wouldn't get from, what, CNN, who has to run all of their coverage through the IDF. Like, it's really uncensored. It's terrifying. It's devastating what they have been sharing. But it is their truths, and that has been so meaningful, I think, to me in terms of actually seeing the human impact and not seeing this kind of sanitized, politicized, agendified version of what the news is and what you can and can't say and what will get you, get you in trouble or won't. It's just their realities. And so I would say that that has been a bit of a shift for me, because generally speaking, I have been a bit more, engaging with traditional media. But this time I really have been getting it straight from the mouths of these young people who are on the ground. And so I would say the format of that has been like Instagram, TikTok, a little bit of Twitter, but really Twitter has been commentary and not as much news breaking because of the just amount of misinformation and disinformation there. Like, you can't really know what you're seeing. So yeah, I would say I actually have eschewed traditional media this time and just gone straight to the source. And that has been, I think, what a lot of younger people have been doing. And I think that's what shaped the way younger people and younger generations are actually reacting to this.
No, thank you for that. We'll go to Chris next, but I just want to clarify the IDF you're talking about is the Israeli Defense Force, right?
The IOF, the IDF, yes. They embedded with CNN, I believe, and the conditions of that was that they approve whatever broadcast before it goes to air.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks. Let's go to Chris next. And Chris, then Carl, then Al.
So I agree with Bizan that the news is rather frustrating. You hear right off the bat from major sources like CBC, The Star, et cetera, whether you're reading it or watching broadcasts, language that is, it seems to be devoid from what's actually happening. It seems to be a lot of he said, she said, they said, or a lot of repeating, like, for instance, Israel says this or military says that, and gone seems to be the analysis. So I tend to look at or scan the headlines for what's going on. Then I prefer to go to sources that add context. There's a lot of great ones on Twitter, for example, as well. But really, sources like Electronic Intifada or getting commentary from experts like Noura Arakat online. So trying to find out how to put things into context has helped me keep a little bit sane. It's like you have to psych yourself up to go check the news sometimes. If I want to laugh, you know, I'll look at a tweet from CBC Pitchbot, which has been on fire, or something from Norman Finkelstein. But really having this type of commentary from Mohammed Shaheda, for example, or background knowledge information from, for example, Zachary Foster of Palestine Nexus is a great way to keep myself focused. Because if we get lost in the what's happening, it's he said, she said, they said. Whereas if we use this time to try and focus with actual understanding and context, helps me keep a little bit more sane. And when I really want to go towards some allies, I'll see what IJV, Independent Jewish Voices Canada, or Jewish Voices for Peace are releasing as press releases, or what some of their folks or people aligned with them are saying, like the great Rabbi David Miviser out of Hamilton. And lastly, of course, I'll go to CJPME, the Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, because they are providing a lot of context and analysis of what's going on and how it's being reported.
Excellent. Thank you. Carl?
So I'm going to be the person here who is the traditionalist, old-fashioned mainstream conventional media person, or just out of habit. I have been watching CNN and CBC and reading the New York Times and the Canadian Toronto Star, Globe and Mail. So I do find that whatever I take with respect the comments about CBC's coverage, but I do find that personally it's better, much better than the American coverage, I think. I mean, maybe we can analyze and dispute that. It's not for nothing that the Conservatives have attacked the CBC in Parliament and committee for instance, saying not calling Hamas a terrorist organization, and for not apologizing for having reported that an early, not the hospital that the Israelis are now attacking, but an earlier attack on another hospital wasn't really them, because some Western sources accepted the Israeli explanation that this was done by another organization, and not by the IDF. So I do think that I do get, at least from CBC, for instance, they're not processing everything through the Israeli Defense Force, and they will, when they could, they'll call into Gaza and they'll talk to people. They spend a lot more time covering the direct experience to the extent they can. I mean, maybe I worked for CBC a long time and I want to defend them. I know over the years that CBC, and I'm just digressing here, has had people in the region permanently, for instance, Neil McDonald years ago. I mean, the Jewish community, the very mainstream establishment Jewish community, and I'm connected to them or know those people, they hated him. I mean, they hated him. If one of the Rabinovich brothers walked into a synagogue, everybody would sit on the other side. I mean, at that time, Bob Rabinovich was president of CBC. But I do also look at, I don't have it on the cable, but I do look at Al Jazeera. They have an excellent program that analyzes media, hosted by a Canadian, actually, called Richard Gisbert. They did a very good, some very good analysis of coverage, international coverage. And there's one, believe it or not, there's a source in Israel, an Israeli newspaper, that is much more candid and frank and much more critical, always has been. I've been reading for years, called Haaretz. And I do read that a lot. I actually pay to subscribe to that so I can see what's going on. So I get a variety of sources. I'm not as accustomed to sifting and winnowing out information through social media and things like that. I'm never sure how to use it, but I think I'm showing my age there.
Thanks, Carl. And just before we go to Al, just to clarify something. Actually, so Chris put in the chat that he also checks, looks at Al Jazeera English. So just to mention that. Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, Carl, so for CBC, in terms of what it has to it nothing gets vetted by the IDF? Is that?
I can't speak for them. I don't think they have people who are, they call this embedded. And I think the way we expressed embedded, it was the sort of upside down. Journalists get themselves embedded with an army. And this started with the Americans in Iraq and Afghanistan. They wouldn't let people cover the war unless they would be embedded with their troops and be under the control of their troops and only see what their troops let them see and essentially become a propaganda arm of their military. I don't believe the CBC has chosen to go that route. They do give a lot of airtime sometimes to the Israeli military spokespeople. But again, I noticed an interview with David Cochrane at CBC, interviewed this guy. He's a really tough looking guy. I'm sorry, I forgot his name. It's kind of a Conricus or something like that. He's a guy, he's always on, constantly talking. And this guy, he had a completely stroke him, I love you, you're wonderful, interview from CNN. When he got it with CBC, he almost took his headset off and left. I mean, he was very annoyed. Like, he says, you're challenging me too much. How dare you challenge anything I say? I'm telling you the truth. Don't you understand? I'm here to tell you the truth. This, and he was negatively commenting on the report that he heard previously. Well, I think that report is very biased. You're not understanding our position properly. So, I mean, at least the CBC is annoying the IDF. Believe me, CNN never does.
All right, thanks. Elle?
Yeah, I mean, I would add, I guess since I'm last, I get to add a bit. But I think we've seen these stress points in traditional media already, and they come out in these crises. So the inability in many ways of traditional media to deal with this kind of thing. We've seen Palestinian journalists fired. So one journalist from CTV Halifax, I want to get their names right. So Yara Jamal was fired. And then also Zahra Al-Akras. So we've seen the firing of Palestinian journalists within Canada. And more broadly, we know that Muslim journalists within newsrooms have spoken about how they're either being silenced or threatened. We've also, of course, seen this vile twisting of language to the point of incomprehensibility in headlines to avoid naming Israel or to avoid actually using any kind of active language. So Palestinians die in explosion at hospital type language. That acts like this stuff is just happening. We're seeing this all over the place. The Breach recently did an article showing that on CTV that I think it was 62% more Israelis interviewed than Palestinians. And Palestinians were typically not even given a name when they were interviewed, while Israeli interviewees were constantly identified, given more airtime. So we've seen this kind of bias across media. So as many people, I don't think many people are turning to legacy media at this moment. As everybody else, you're looking on social media where you can get direct footage. We've seen the heroic journalists of Gaza, who are really showing up, so many of our craven and cowardly journalists here. We've, of course, seen in response to that direct and targeted attacks on journalists precisely so that we don't have access to this information, which shows us exactly how much fear there is of the kind of coverage we're actually seeing direct from the ground. So we've seen an unprecedented amount of journalists die in Gaza, more than in any other conflict. And not only them dying, but their families being targeted and attacked, which exactly shows what we fear. And we've also heard this rhetoric from everyone from Obama to, you know, this fear of TikTok and social media precisely because that media isn't being controlled. And when people are seeing the direct images, it's quite uncomplicated to people. So despite what we're told that this is too complex, it's very Orientalist narrative, right? That the mysterious, inscrutable East that's just too complex for us to understand. So we should just be quiet and not engage. And then, of course, it's not complex to people when they're able to see these images. And we've seen this direct, which isn't new, but a renewed kind of attack on TikTok, for example, because generationally young people are on TikTok. They're seeing this footage directly. They're overwhelmingly recognizing what has happened, calling for ceasefires, recognizing Israel's occupation, recognizing the violence being done. And in return, we've seen all these institutional figures make attempts to shut that down or speak about how this is disinformation, as if we can't receive this direct information. And the final thing I'll say is we've also seen very disgraceful behavior from politicians, such as posting videos that directly contradict what we're being told is said. So, for example, the video of students chanting, Trudeau, Trudeau, you can't hide, which was misattributed to be Judah, you can't hide. And then we saw people like Mark Miller retweet this with no critique, even though we could all clearly hear what the students are saying. These are children and minors that were being targeted by groups like CEJA, that were directly harassing, doxing, targeting these students, claiming they were saying this extremely hateful thing when we could all watch the video and see they weren't. Those tweets were then taken down with literally no recognition, no apology, no rescinding of the call for these students to be disciplined. And we saw that retweeted by politicians. So we've also seen a real push for disinformation that our politicians are posting. So it's a moment where we really understand that in the West, all of these fault lines we saw in our media, from the treatment of racialized journalists, from the inability to report accurately on the rest of the world, to the way that our politicians jump on issues and the lack of research, and then also these generational issues as well. So I think it's really shown us. And then, of course, the heroism of our journalist counterparts in Gaza that really put us all to shame.
Well, thanks very much, Ellen. And thanks to all of you for really such illuminating views about your own experiences with media. It's just fascinating to hear the sources that you go to. I'd like to turn now to Chris, because just to kind of focus in on this a bit more, as Chris, you mentioned earlier, Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, and I know you're involved with that organization, as I am actually, and the organization has actually been engaged with media monitoring and accountability on coverage about Palestine and Israel. I mean, a huge project to take on to try and sort of like do an overview of what's going on in the media and debrief and actually bring forward factual information. So I wonder if you could just take a couple of minutes and tell us about this project that CJPME has going and why you think it's important to have that kind of media accountability that CJPME is going through.
Certainly. Thank you. And of course, full disclosure, I'm on the board of CJPME. I don't have direct say over its day-to-day operations. And of course, everything I'm saying today does not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of CJPME. I'm just speaking to the program itself, and I'm here to talk about the good it's done. So this is, we believe it's one of the first in the world as a systematic advocacy on the media, at least on Canadian media, that's pro-Palestinian. So the idea here is it's helping change the way the media covers Palestine by monitoring, issuing requests for clarifications, challenge them, media sources on accuracy. And what we essentially do is mobilize media responders. So we have services that monitor various news sources. We then send out to media responders who have volunteered to sign up for this, as well as some folks on at CJPME. And then we encourage people to challenge media bias that's out there. And of course, we try to correct inaccuracies where they come up. So corrections, a look for apologies, clarifications, and influence how things are presented. So if this initially came up as sort of a response to Honest Reporting Canada, which is an organization that for a long time has had a pro-Israel bias and tend to pressure the media, as well as other sources and other programs that tend to pressure the media to be more pro-Israel, to speak more favorably of Israel. So the idea here is, okay, well, we're going to try and look for inaccuracies, things that are factually incorrect, and bias coverage, and challenge that. We've done a lot here. So some key wins have been things like correcting maps of Palestine. CBC put out a map that included all of Jerusalem and the Golan Heights as part of Israel, where that's not the case. East Jerusalem is considered Palestinian or occupied Palestinian territory. Even since October 7th, we've helped get about 20 letters to the editor published, which have called out inaccuracies and bias in framing in the media. There's been numerous Toronto Star articles that have had corrections printed for things like omission of Palestinian civilian casualties, despite listing the Israeli ones only. Pardon me. Earlier in the year, when Sarah Jama was running, for example, in Hamilton, some clarification and getting papers to clarify that the chants for free Palestine chants, such as from the river to the sea, is not in fact anti-Semitic, but is a call for freedom. So the paper went from something like saying, well, this is a potentially anti-Semitic to this is, some say, a call for freedom. So it's an improvement. It's a shift away from the previous narrative painting pro-Palestinian activism as anti-Semitic, which, of course, isn't the case for a whole variety of reasons. Yep. So it's we've had corrections and other things printed in La Presse and Le Trois, The Star, CBC, things that cover violations of reporting standards and referring to Palestine, correcting misinterpretations, and additional historical notes. So it's pretty good stuff. And we'd encourage folks to go check it out at CJPME and look for the Media Accountability Project if they want to find out more or help out.
And I just want to bring in El and Baysan now, because it seems that there's, at least it feels to me, that there's a huge gulf and gap between what I would call sort of the political class and what's being put out in the media through tweets or statements, and what we're seeing in the more sort of activist community. And Baysan, you talked earlier about how you're using direct sources to find out what's happening on the ground. Both of you, Baysan and El, you're both very strong activists in the community, and you're both active in social media and in working to bring about change. So I'm just curious as to how you contend with what the media is putting out there on Gaza and Israel, and how have you responded to those narratives yourself, especially where you believe them to be false? What is it that you, what have you been able to do or not do? Are you feeling strong about being able to respond to the twists and the turns and the untruths and the falsehoods? Is it a constant struggle for you, or how are you responding to those kinds of narratives? So why don't we begin with Elle, and then we'll go to Baysan.
Yeah, I think all along what we've seen, and I mean, I want to actually take us back to the World Cup, because I think that was a bit of a presaging of this, where we kept seeing these outbursts at the World Cup that really shocked the Western world, right? Because people didn't really understand the Arab world. And the minute we saw this event within the Arab world, we constantly saw these outbreaks onto the pitch of people running with the Palestinian flag. We saw all these chants of free Palestine. And that was this moment that I think really should have perhaps shown us what was coming and the way that the world was going. But of course, we're so used to having this unified narrative here. I say that because I think what we've seen in this moment is so many people have turned to these direct actions. Quite rightly, we just saw, you know, Trudeau last night going to a restaurant and people saying blood on your hands. We saw the Scotiabank Awards, which really exposed to us, the Giller Awards, sponsored by Scotiabank, where we got a nice view of all our can-lit heroes sneering, shrugging, and being annoyed at the idea of calling for a ceasefire as if literature is not political, right? So I think we've seen these very effective actions that have gone in to intervene into these institutional spaces, from you know, going straight to where politicians are and making sure that they know that people are confronting them. We've seen people pushing back on politicians going to mosques and being like, no, you're not going to come in here while you're doing this to Muslim life. We've seen all kinds of events be interrupted and intervened in. So I think that's very effective. I think, you know, we do have, obviously, it's very difficult in that sense to do the fact check, right? Because this information just moves so quickly. We've seen Israel just delete so much information. They just deleted their tour of the hospital and there's nothing said about it. It's put out. CNN reported on that ridiculous calendar of terrorists that was just the days of the week. And then these things aren't retracted.
That was a small portion of our most recent political panel, Off the Hill, Media Accountability and Covering Gaza. Thank you to our guests for joining us, and thank you to everyone who registered to attend this week's live panel. For all of you who missed this panel and would like to watch the full recording, please visit Rabble TV or our YouTube channel. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It, and for that we'll hand it over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. In labor news, while the Liberals were working on putting forward an anti-scab bill, two Canadian Crown corporations were using non-unionized labor to create commercials. The Alliance of Canadian Cinema, Television and Radio Artists, ACTRA, found that both Canada Post and the CBC had contracted non-unionized labor through the Institute of Canadian Artists. The Institute has refused to sign on to ACTRA's National Commercial Agreement, which is a commitment to use unionized labor, as well as supporting sustainable wages and pensions. Just 2 weeks ago, Canada's Labour Minister Seamus O'Regan introduced anti-scab legislation into the House of Commons that would ban replacement workers from being used in union jobs in most federally regulated workplaces like Crown corporations. O'Regan had said of scab workers, quote, "Replacement workers distract from the table. They prolong disputes. They poison workplaces for years," end quote. Rabble reached out to O'Regan's office for a comment for this story, but did not hear back by time of publication. In Canadian politics, far-right American media personality Tucker Carlson will be coming to Canada to interview Alberta Premier Danielle Smith this coming January. Carlson formerly hosted a show on Fox News where he peddled conspiracy theories and white supremacist dog whistles. Carlson also has previously called for Canada to be invaded by the United States for being too socialist. Rabble contributor David Kleimenhage commented that Smith will see the interview with Carlson as a win because she mostly agrees with him and it will reinforce her extreme conservative credentials with her party's base. In national news, November 22nd is National Housing Day, and Rabble columnist Kathy Crow is warning that this day has quickly lost its original meaning and has been co-opted by housing developers. Originally created in 1998 to recognize the need for affordable housing for all, the day has quickly devolved into a reason to advertise for real estate companies and housing developers. Crow argues that now, more than ever, Canada needs to declare a national housing emergency to address the current crisis of homelessness. Also this week, and staying on the issue of housing, Rabble is proud to feature Kate Chung, co-founder of the Accessible Housing Network, as our latest Rabble Rouser to watch. The Accessible Housing Network is a collaboration of nonprofit Canadian organizations advocating in support of people of all ages to live as they wish in housing that is fully accessible. Chung said that she has been keenly aware of social inequality since a young age and continues her organizing and advocacy work thanks to inspiration from her children and grandchildren. To read the full version of all of these stories that we talked about today, please visit rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.